Welcome to Season 15 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go! Welcome back. I am excited you're here. Season 15 has been all about covering topics that are extremely important in leadership, but we haven't covered them in much depth or in detail. In this week's episode covers a topic that we should have covered a long time ago, and that is emotional intelligence. Now, there might be no one better that we could have had on the show than Justin Bariso, because he has become an expert in this topic, so much so that he just wrote a brand new book called EQ Applied, The Real World Guide to Emotional Intelligence. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Justin, he's an author, he's a speaker and a consultant, and one of Inc.com's most popular columnists. He's reached millions of people with his writing, and he did an incredible job in this conversation. We covered what is emotional intelligence and why is it so important. We talked about, can it be coached or trained? My favorite part of the discussion, there's six surprising ways to build emotional intelligence for you in your life, and they're things that you probably do every single day. You're just going to have to start doing them differently. We talked about empathy. We talked about influence. I mean, this conversation is loaded with stuff that you can not only learn, but apply. So without further ado, here is my interesting conversation with my friend, Justin Bariso. Justin, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, John, thanks for having me.
You've written about a topic. Actually, you've been writing about emotional intelligence for some time and been wildly popular. I mean, people just kind of gravitate towards this idea of emotional intelligence, but I'm not sure many people exactly know what it is. What is emotional intelligence?
Okay, so emotional intelligence basically is your ability to identify emotions, so you kind of know what you're feeling or what someone else is feeling. You understand how those feelings influence behavior. So if you identify that your wife is in a specific mood, for example, then you know that's going to affect how she behaves. She may respond differently to you than she would at other times or when she's feeling otherwise. And then it's also the power to influence those emotions or manage those emotions. So for yourself, it could be something like, you know that you're in a bad mood and you can kind of get yourself out of it. I mean, it may not be the next second, but you have tools that can help you get out of that bad mood in a relatively short amount of time. Or you may even be able to influence others' emotions. So if your significant other's in a bad mood, then you know what you can do. Sometimes it means just getting out of their way, right? But other times there's things you can say, things you can do to help them through the feelings that they're having. So that's emotional intelligence, the ability to identify, understand, and manage emotions. And I put it in a very short and sweet sentence. I say emotional intelligence is the ability to make emotions work for you instead of against you.
Well, that's well said, Justin. I was watching the game two of the NBA finals last night.
And yes, we're both big basketball fans.
Yeah, and at the end of the game, the Warriors won pretty convincingly. And Doris Burke was interviewing Steph Curry. And she asked the very last question she asked Steph Curry is this. She says, "Familiarity can breed contempt at times. You had a moment with Kendrick Perkins as the series wears on, the emotions continue to rise. How do you manage that and stay competitive?" And he responded, "If it gets fiery, that's fine. But we can't ever let it distract us from what we are trying to execute on the floor. And up until this point, we have done it really well." How did Steph Curry do when responding to the idea of the emotions rising as the series goes on?
Well, I mean, that's the first time I didn't see that post-game interviews. That's the first time I heard that quote. But yeah, it sounds pretty good. I mean, that's part of what emotional intelligence is about, is being able to channel emotions and stay focused. For example, in the book, I interview a psychologist, Dr. Drew Brannon, and he actually helps athletes and teams to deal with psychological issues. For example, a player that is a very high performer, but when someone talks trash to him or her, it gets them out of their game. And I interviewed him, and he had some interesting things to say. So he'll help players like that to kind of have a go-to mechanism or a cue. So if they notice that someone's getting them riled up or someone's starting to get in their heads, they go to a predetermined routine. They go through a routine that helps them to get that person out of their head and focus on the task at hand. And so that kind of sounds similar to what Steph is talking about here. Rivalry and competition. I mean, that's the name of the game, right? That's their business. So they can use that, but can they stay focused? Because if someone's, starting to get in your head, and now, for example, that happened a couple years ago, right? Draymond Green, he got suspended for a game because he let his emotions get away from him, and they lost that series, against the Cavs in the finals. So that's the thing, for example, in the game of basketball, you have to be able to channel that emotion, use that. If somebody makes you angry, use that anger to help you focus and to play better, but don't let it distract you from what you're trying to do.
And when you talk about basketball, most people aren't professional basketball players. And so the game has this certain level of emotion and competitiveness kind of built into it. Now, right. When people go to work every single day, depending on the environment that you – our listeners work in, most likely you just don't have that level of intensity or competitiveness day right. in, day out. So the emotions tend to be not as high or not as low. But does that mean that we still don't need the emotional intelligence, or does it mean we need it more?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everybody needs it. And, it just comes down to, you look at your situation and you see how you need it. So here's some ways it might manifest itself in a more everyday work environment. So one of the tools I talk about in the book is the pause. And the pause is very simply taking some moments when you're in an emotional state to stop before you say or do anything that you might regret. And that sounds like, it sounds like common sense. And in essence, it is. I mean, our parents, I think many of them teach us that at an early age, but it's so difficult to execute. And to illustrate, think about how many times you've sent an angry email. I know I've done it. You get an email, it's like, man, it's not, what's going on. I need to respond to this person right now. And you respond right away. And you come back sometimes even just 10 minutes later or an hour later, and you're like, oh my goodness, what have I done? Why did I speak to this person like that? This is not how I want to represent myself on a professional level, And so having that tool in mind, the pause, can help you because, you might be tempted to respond to that email and you say, nope, I'm going to pause for whatever it is, maybe 2 minutes. Sometimes just getting up and getting a drink of water and coming back will already, it's enough to get you and get your emotions under control where you say, no, I better not respond to this now. I'll respond in an hour, for example. That's just one example. And then it all just depends on what your environment is, what your specific, and as an individual, we all have different challenges too. You may be very good at certain things emotionally speaking, and have weaknesses in others. And I may be stronger in those areas, but have definite weaknesses where you have strengths. So that's part of emotional intelligence too, is identifying where are my strengths and weaknesses. It takes time, it takes effort. And that's why I think it's such a valuable skill, because once you learn to do it, then you can learn, again, just how to make those emotions work for you.
I had honestly only ever thought of emotional intelligence as a positive until I read your book. I mean,
okay.
and in many ways, it is a big time positive. But you kind of make this case that the people that are really high in emotional intelligence can actually use that, as an advantage over other people or in a negative way. And so it kind of got me thinking like, wow, it can actually be a negative versus only a positive. Explain that further.
Sure. So, first of all, and that's one thing I really want to tackle in this book. I dedicate a whole chapter, actually more than a chapter, to that, because I allude to it other times too. But in the past, that's what I'd seen too, is people only talk about emotional intelligence as a positive thing. But first of all, emotional, you know, we can compare it to traditional intelligence, right? Someone can have a very high IQ and they can use that for good or for bad. You know, so a very smart, intelligent person can be a life-saving doctor. He can be, he or she can be, you know, solve crimes at a very high level, or they can have a very high IQ and they can be a criminal mastermind, or they could be, you know, basically, you know, anything, a serial killer, you know? So emotional intelligence is the same way. You know, it's, if you know how to identify and understand emotions and you know how to manage them, you can use that in a positive way. And we've talked mostly positively up to this point, but, one of the quotes in the book, Milton Friedman said, "The power to do good is also the power to do harm." Okay, so if someone has the ability to manage and influence emotions, and they could also use that to get others to do things for selfish reasons, and we see it, for example, in marketing and advertising, right? People, companies are trying to play on our emotions to get us to buy. Politicians are trying to play on our emotions to get us to get people to vote for them. So the key here is, you know, everyone kind of does this to an extent. So the key is, how are they using it, you know, and are they using it to be harmful? And sometimes, you know, there's a fine line. Well, how do you determine if someone's just trying to get you to buy their product, or do they not care that their product is something that, you know, you'll regret buying 6 months from now or whatever it is? It's a fine line. It's hard to determine the ethics of it. And that's why I say that's why it's also so important to build up your own emotional intelligence so you can identify that. So you can see when people are trying to play on your emotions, influence you, and at times also manipulate you, because, you know, then you can decide for yourself. You know, you can see if someone's trying to influence your emotions, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, a very good public speaker, a motivational speaker, is going to try to influence you on an emotional level. And that's not necessarily bad if they're trying to be helpful. But, you know, we get into a very complicated subject because they could have good intention, but the actions could still be harmful. So that's why it's good for all of us to build our own emotional intelligence so we can identify that. So we can see when someone is working on us on an emotional level, and then we can decide, you know, in a balanced way, acknowledging those emotions, but then also thinking rationally, okay, is this is something I want someone really to motivate me to do? Sometimes the answer is yes, and that's great, but the answer may also be no.
Well, you bring up a really interesting point about building each of ours emotional intelligence higher so we can determine those two paths. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, the difference in coaching versus training. And if you think of it from a, you know, coaching perspective, is all about assisting individuals to implement what it is they've learned, you know, within a given context, such as the workplace or their personal life. It's kind of helping them improve their performance, taking it to the next level. Whereas training tends to be more about, you know, the process in which someone learns something new or gains new knowledge. So the natural questions then to me about emotional intelligence is, can it be trained like a new skill, or does it need to be more coached and kind of developed within someone, because we all kind of have it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I definitely believe both. Okay, so I talk about in the book, I allude a lot, or I actually speak specifically about Carol Dweck's, you know, famous book Mindset, and she talks about the growth mindset and not limiting yourself, but realizing that you can grow in your abilities. And, you know, we get into the neuroscience a little bit. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I speak to a neuroscientist, and I made sure, you know, to get to that everything that's in the book is representing what we currently understand about the brain. And that's something that neuroscientists for some time now have recognized, that the brain is what they call plastic. So it's not so fixed as what they thought before, but it can grow through experience, through training. So I do think training helps. And I think coaching, of course, is one step further. And I think that's the best way to have it, because, you know, we can train ourselves. And that's the thing with our emotions, is we have, you know, you hear a lot in the news today about unconscious bias. And that's the thing, is we're very limited by our own perspective and our own experiences. And that's why I encourage in the book people to reach out to others that they trust to get some feedback on how others see them and how they process emotions, how they handle emotions. But, you know, just to take it one step further, continuing to get that feedback. And if you have, you know, it's hard to, not everyone's going to be able to afford a personal coach, for example, or a business coach or what it may be. But that's why, you know, I outline certain in the book, certain persons that you can go to, whether it be family members, you know, who they may also have similar unconscious biases, but also other persons that you trust, but that see the world a little bit differently than you, that have a different perspective than you, to get that consistent feedback, and then to keep doing that. Because, you know, it's like a muscle. If you don't keep training it, then it begins to atrophy, right? It's the same thing with anything. So, you know, you may develop very high emotional intelligence skills, but then, you know, you kind of feel like, okay, I got this. You know, and then that's when you make a big mistake and you just don't realize that you've actually started to see things in a completely different way. So continuing to get that feedback is very helpful.
Yeah, it's like I can always remember, you know, I'm one of three boys, Justin, and somebody like, well, that brother is really book smart. And mm-hmm. that other brother is really street smart. And, right. And for some reason, that image comes to my brain when you just were going through that about developing it. And while it, certainly you can teach people to be a little bit more street smart or a little bit more book smart, there's some DNA involved there. But ultimately, getting someone else to really help develop it and push you and bring it out of you, no matter what side of that coin you're on, is a powerful way to go about doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
I think. And, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. The other thing I was gonna say is, and what you're describing too, book smart, street smart. You know, these are different. What we would have thought of in the past, and probably still, as different types of traditional intelligence, right? I mean, mm-hmm. traditional intelligence, the way we understand it. Can manifest itself also in different ways. And I think it's the same way with emotional intelligence. So, and that's what I was talking about earlier. Like you might be very skilled. Okay, I'll talk about my brother. Okay, my brother's a musician and he is able to channel his emotions into music in a way that I simply can't. I don't have that ability. And that's what draws us to our favorite musicians is it's not just that they're technically skilled at playing an instrument. It's that they can put the emotion in it. You can feel how they play that instrument. That's also emotional intelligence, okay? Because it's you know, we go back to that basic definition of, and again, this is my definition, making emotions work for you. You know, he's able to use emotions in that way. And so that's my point here is that people have different kinds of emotional intelligence. And so, you know, it's all about identifying, okay, where am I strong so I can continue using that to my advantage? Where am I weak so that, you know, if I want to sharpen that, if I want to work on that, I'll never be as strong as someone else who has it as a natural strength, but I can study it and train myself so that I can keep it from becoming a major pitfall. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, I found this interesting. You had six surprising ways to build emotional intelligence in the book. And I think our audience will find these a little bit fascinating because I did. I was like, really? The first was watch movies. The second uh-huh. was listen to music. The third uh-huh. was to read. The fourth was to engage in sports and exercise. The fifth was to write. And the sixth was travel. Why do these six things, kind of all encompassing, or you can hit on one or the other if you really want, but why would these things build emotional intelligence?
Sure. So there's a caveat to that, okay? And readers will see when they read the book that it's how you do each of those things. And at least for three or four of them, I included you know, studies. I linked to studies so they can see a little bit of evidence behind that. The others I think are a little bit self-explanatory, but like movies, for example, so we can watch a movie and we can enjoy it and that's fun and that's great, but you can also watch a movie and you can take time. And this is something I personally do. After a movie, I will spend sometimes hours, if the movie's good enough, and I put myself into that character's shoes, and I say, what would I have done in that circumstance? Or the emotion itself is the catalyst. Like, you have a strong emotional reaction to a film, and you say, man, why do I feel this way? Like, oh, I would never do that. What he did? Why did he do that? So dumb, you know? And then you try to understand, okay, well, why did things in the film go this way? Or what would I have done in that person's shoes? Or what would someone that's close to me? Oh, man, that's exactly what my brother would have done, you know, or something mm-hmm. like that. So that's how you build emotional intelligence after watching a film. And we go through each of those. Yeah.
I think this is fascinating because I don't watch a ton of shows or television or movies. I mean, I watch sports, obviously, but when I do watch a show, I subconsciously do that a lot. I mean, and I think it's neat to know that we can make anybody can make the time that they spend watching, you know, you name your favorite show, and either putting themselves in that situation. So it's not just a check out, waste of time, veg out, brain too.
Right.
It's like you can do some of your favorite things and at the same time build your emotional intelligence to help you, you know, use and leverage your emotions better in your life, you know, as you go. I think it's a fascinating concept.
Yeah, at the very least, it's a good excuse, right? Somebody catches you at work watching a movie and you're like, hey, I'm building my emotional intelligence.
Yeah, that's funny. That is really funny. I'm going to use that. Now, there's two specific things that I want to dig into here because you cover some really interesting topics. The first one I want to cover, which is so important in leadership, which is influence. Mm-hmm. And you actually say influence is the act of affecting a person's character or behavior by means other than force. And you use a story about this FBI agent named Chris Voss. You can tell it if you'd like. But explain why influence is so important in emotional intelligence. And obviously, we're interested in it because of the leadership component.
Sure. So Chris Voss is one of my favorite persons I interviewed in the book. He was the former lead FBI kidnap investigator. And so his job basically was to negotiate with terrorists and kidnappers, get them to let people go, get them to let go of their, you know, very, very large demands in some cases. And he's a master of influence. He wrote a great book, so I'll give him a plug there, Never Split the Difference. And I read his book, and he just got so many of these principles. And I could see the connection to emotional intelligence all throughout his book. So basically the story I use in my book is he had I think it was three gang members holed up. He didn't know if they had hostages too. And basically he was trying to get them to come out without a fight, you know, without losing any life. And he was in front of this door for hours speaking to these people, and they did not say a word back to him. And he didn't really know if he was reaching them. And he was using what he calls his late night FM DJ voice, just very calm and, you know, just very trying to walk them through the situation. Look, you know, this is the situation. This is how it could end. You know, this is what we don't want to happen. And after several hours, boom, the door opens. they all walk out and no fight. You know, they give up. And he asked them, you know, later, so what made you guys, you know, finally come out? And they said, well, you know, I can't remember the exact words, but basically, you know, we believed what you said and you gave us the best case scenario. And so we took it. And to me, that's the crux of emotional influence. You know, when you can use, when you can reach someone on an emotional level and get them. And now again, it's possible for people to use this negatively, but here is a very positive influence where Chris was able to reach the best case scenario just by using words, basically, and tone. And so that's what I see is very important. Now, going back to your question, so the leadership aspect, you know, at work, for example, if you're leading a team, getting to know your people, getting to know, you know, every individual they're going to respond to different situations, different ways. They're going to respond to different communication. They're going to have different communication styles. So you're at an advantage than Chris because he didn't know these people, right? But you can get to know the people on your team, and that takes time. But you can get to know their communication styles. You can get to know how you can reach them on an individual level, and then you can use that because now you can adjust your own communication style. And this isn't to say not be authentic, you know, because that's part of emotional intelligence. I preach that in the book. Be authentic, be yourself, but learning to also be flexible and adaptable and finding that balance between the two. And that can really help you to lead in a team where you're influencing people, where they respond to you, where they want to do what you're asking them to do. So you're not, you know, you're not the boss. You're not the clueless boss. Man, this guy or this woman, they do not get me. They don't know what it's like to have the job that I have. No, that you are able to reach them on a level where they say, man, he gets it or she gets it. And that motivates them to follow, you know, what you're asking them to do or to work together with you. And we've all had, well, hopefully many of us have had that. We've had both. We've had the bad boss, but hopefully many of us have had the good boss where we say, you know, we'll jump through hoops for that person because we know they get it. They care about us as a person or they care about us, you know, on that work level. And so we're motivated to do practically anything for them at work.
It's interesting in that story about Chris too. I mean, at the time when he's going through that situation or even at work. I mean, Chris didn't know whether the words were influencing them.
Right.
Isn't that what's so interesting about it? And from a leadership perspective, oftentimes leaders don't know the power and how closely people are watching them, their every move, and they're influencing people and they don't even know it sometimes. And the more emotionally intelligent a leader is, the more they will know the power of that influence and the way their actions and their behaviors and their words and how that's going to influence other people. And it's truly almost a fascinating thing to think about, and how sometimes if you don't know someone, you just won't know the influence you're having until later. Or if you do know someone really well and you're high in emotional intelligence, you probably do know how it's influencing them.
Yeah, big time. And that's part of what I wanted to do, you know, not just through this book, but that's what I try to do through my column too, because, mm-hmm. you know, being completely honest, you know, let's go back 20 years when I was a new manager, I didn't have these skills. You know, I maybe had some things that I was better at than others, but I benefited from a lot of training. I benefited a lot from great mentorship, other good managers that taught me, you know, how to put people first, how to reach people. And so I try to distill those lessons into something that, you know, in a quick, article on Inc., someone can have one takeaway that they can say, okay, well, here's something I can put into practice and that will help me reach people a little bit better today. And then the book is just a much deeper dive into that.
Yeah. Well, there's one more topic I want to definitely get to. I'd be doing our audience a disservice if I didn't get to it. And that is, you talk at length about empathy. And some people have said empathy is the most important characteristic a leader can have. And it's one of these words that most people are just kind of like, yeah, he's empathetic or she's empathetic, but we really don't understand it that much. And you've studied it now and you wrote about it a lot in the book. What is empathy? And most importantly, how can leaders get more of it?
Yes. So this is probably one of my favorite topics just at all to talk about, because like you said, many of us, and I include myself in the past, didn't fully understand what empathy is. So we basically understand what it is, right? Empathy is being able to understand another person's thoughts or feelings, to put ourselves in their shoes. And we can even break it down into three different kinds of empathy. That's what Daniel Goleman and Paul Ekman do. But I don't want to get into all that right now. Just basically, empathy is being able to understand others. And the thing about today is you hear about it a lot. Yeah, we need more empathy in the world. And, you know, everyone wants empathy to be shown to them, but many times we're not ready to show that to others. And what's the reason? It's because it's work to be empathetic. Okay. And it's not easy. So for example, you know, there's huge divides politically, right now in the United States. And everyone talks about more empathy, but then as soon as someone doesn't share your same values or principles, then that person is not deserving of empathy anymore, you know, or at least that's what we're saying practically, because we basically don't give it to them. But that's when you need it the most, when you don't share values with someone, when you don't see eye to eye with someone. That's when you have to work harder to understand, well, why do they feel the way they do, or why do they think the way they do? And we'll go back to Chris Voss for a second from the FBI, because he told me something that was really, I felt this really opened my eyes to the value of empathy. He said, well, first of all, he talks about how empathy does not mean agreement. Okay. So empathy does not mean agreement. He had to, again, negotiate with kidnappers, terrorists, and he had to be able to get into their head. He had to be able to understand, why are they in this place? Why are they doing what they're doing? And that involves empathy. It doesn't mean he agrees with where they are. It does not mean at all, obviously, that he agreed with the methods they were using, but he had to learn to understand those people and to be able to see where they're coming from if he had any chance at all of reasoning with them and influencing them. And so that's where we lose what we lose sight of many times today. For example, racial relations are a big topic also in the United States right now. A white supremacist. Now, of course, I'm from mixed culture. My father's from the Philippines. I grew up in southern part of the United States. Most of my friends were black, African-American. So I absolutely despise any type of racism or racial prejudice. However, a white supremacist, that person was not born thinking that way. Okay, and you will have no chance influencing them to think otherwise if you attack them and their views. But if you can be empathetic to them, if you can learn, you know, if you can get to know a person on a level, so why do you feel that way? If we can get to know, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, many times it means having a conversation with them, but it also means, you know, going beneath the level and finding underneath the surface and finding out, how did that person end up in this place? What are they afraid of? What are they angry at? You know, because it's not just that they hate a person of another race. It's those feeling or those beliefs stem from feelings of anger and fear. And like we said, they're not born with those feelings. So something caused that to happen. And when you can understand what makes one person think that way is different from what may make another person think that way. And if you can understand on an individual level why this person thinks the way they do, and then, you know, that's the beginning of being able to help them to see the other side. But don't, you know, make no mistake, it's not easy, and I'm not claiming that. But this is a much better way than attacking them in their views, because now you're only going to force them to dig in their heels. And even if you win the fight, so to speak, you're not going to win the war. Mm-hmm. If you do something evil to them, that's just going to make them believe even more in what they believe. And, you know, watch out for what comes next. But the goal is to try to reach them on an empathetic level, understand, okay, how did they get there, so that hopefully you have some chance of being able to influence them to see the other side.
I have to say, I've gotten really good at this in my marriage, Justin. 7 years of marriage, and I feel like I'm finally at a breakthrough moment where I can empathize with my wife's position.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're making big strides personally here on from a John's perspective. So, it's easy to think that way because, you know, we obviously encounter empathy and influence and emotional intelligence at work in a big way. But it's so easy just to think about it in our home lives because it's distinctly evident. And I have to ask you the hardest question of all, and that is, how do you help develop emotional intelligence in a six-year-old?
In a six-year-old? Oh, man. Well, believe it or not, that might be the easiest person to develop it in. I'll tell you why. Because they're so malleable and because they're so just open to soak up information. So we were talking before we started the podcast. I also have a six-year-old at home, a little boy, and he is just always soaking everything up. So just setting the right example by asking him questions. So like if he's, if you see him in an angry mood, you know, ask them, you know, first of all, you might have to pause, right? We go back to the pause. So you know, give him some time, give him some space to calm down a little bit, then come back, ask him, hey, why were you so angry a few minutes ago? Yeah, because my sister did this and that. Okay, but, you know, she does that. She's done that other times. And, you know, you don't get so angry. What else is there? You know, and then you're going to get him to think. Maybe it's a bad day at school. Maybe he dealt with a bully. Maybe, you know, his sister said something specific that got to him. And see, already through these conversations, you're teaching him or her to ask those questions themselves when you're not around, you know, and then they start developing that self-awareness, and self-awareness is the first step to the other facets of emotional intelligence.
Well, I think it's so important, and you're right. Our kids are sponges, and it makes the example that we set ever more important. Because
yes.
they're watching everything that you do, and same at work. I know I feel like a broken record, because every podcast I talk about how important your example is at work, from work ethic to how you treat people to the words that you use to, you know, to the relationships that you have. I mean, whether leaders like it or not, they're being watched. You're being watched at home. Your spouse is taking note. Your kids are taking note. Like this world of emotional intelligence. And this book you've written, EQ Applied, it's just – I don't know if it's ever been more important than right now.
That's how I personally feel. But, it's something that's I think for all of us, it's worth thinking about and working on, because it can benefit you in so many different ways.
Well, you get to leave our audience with one bit of advice. What would that bit of advice be after the point you are in your life today?
One bit of advice. I'd say schedule time to just sit and think. So, I think that's always been important, but nowadays, and again, I'll include myself, it's so easy to get distracted because we're so constantly connected. You know, I find myself sometimes just going from device to device. I'm, you know, tied at times to to find out, okay, what's going on at work? Did someone return this email yet? How is this performing? What about this? And if we don't watch out, we completely overschedule our day. Or if nothing's scheduled, then you fill out that block of time with, you know, useless stuff, checking social media for the 13th time that hour, you know, just because there's nothing else. So in other words, scheduling time to stop and think, where you have an actual block in your calendar that says, I'm going to sit right now for whatever it is, 30 minutes, 1 hour, if you can. Hey, if not, then hey, 15 minutes to stop and think about something specific. And in the book, I give you, you know, tons of different things you can think about in relation to your emotions, but it doesn't have to be that. Hey, stop and think about what you're thankful for. Stop and think about who haven't you spoken to in a long time? Who have you lost touch with that you would like to reconnect with? But schedule time to stop and think, because I think we're losing that ability to think because we're just constantly connected and we're just going from one thing to the next.
It's great advice. It's just so good. And it's so simple. I mean, but often it's the simple advice that's so practical and useful. And I'm amazed at, you know, when I really take time to think right out of the gate in the morning and do nothing but, you know, in my case, I like to pray and take time just to think. It's amazing how much better the day goes.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's great advice. Where can people find out more about you, the book? Point people to the right places.
Sure. Yeah. The book is available online. Most major book retailers. So Amazon, iBooks, Barnes & Noble, all the major ones. And if you're not interested in buying the book, then hopefully you'll check out my column. So I write for Inc. and Time, but mostly for Inc. So check out my column on Inc. and hopefully you find something useful. And please reach out. I'm so happy to hear from readers about what they found useful, also what they disagree with. Okay. It's all about John, I've learned from you, you know, I've learned from our other fellow Inc. columnists. I learn from readers all the time, reach out and say, no, you got this wrong. And I'm happy to discuss, you know, because, hey, I have gotten things wrong before. So I really encourage readers to reach out. You can find me on Twitter, Justin J. Bariso, LinkedIn, Justin Bariso. Yeah, reach out and we'll talk.
Well, the book is EQ Applied, The Real World Guide to Emotional Intelligence. Justin, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, John. It's been a privilege.
Thanks for joining us on another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my heart. Until next time, be a good leader at work and at home.